Welcome to Farm and Fiddle, the radio program that celebrates and explores rural life for today and tomorrow. Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. on KOPN 89.5 FM and KOPN.org. And it's where the birds and the bees and the donkeys and the fiddles all come together. I'm your host, Margot McMillan, and we're all glad that you're here, too. Thanks for listening. In this podcast edition of Farm and Fiddle, we are going to be introduced to Deb Hudman, who is the researcher in charge of a unique project identifying ticks in Missouri and trying to figure out what diseases they might be carrying and what dangers they pose in our many ecosystems. We have, of course, Ozark areas that are mostly limestone and forest, and then we have prairies that are mostly, prairie soil and especially a lot of clay and prairie grasses. So we have ticks of many different kinds, and Deb is gathering ticks from all over the state, every county in the state, and analyzing them for possible diseases that they're carrying. This episode of Farm and Fiddle first aired on April 20th, 2022, at 6 p.m. Central Time. We air on Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Central Time on KOPN 89.5 FM in mid-Missouri and KOPN.org on the World Wide Web. Deb's laboratory is at A.T. Still University in Kirksville, Missouri. And we talked to her on Zoom.
Well, maybe we could just start by you can tell me a little bit about your project.
Okay, so last year, the Missouri Department of Conservation collaborated with A.T. Still University, and the idea is to create a map, basically, of what tick species are present at the county level throughout the state of Missouri, and then also test a subset of those ticks that have been submitted for four different genera of human that can cause human pathogens. So Borrelia species, which would be like Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the agent of Lyme disease, or Borrelia lone starry, which is the agent of southern tick-associated rash illness, or more commonly known as starry. Also Ehrlichia species, so Ehrlichia chaffeensis, Ehrlichia wingii, these all cause ehrlichiosis. Rickettsial species, and there's lots and lots of rickettsial species, but Rickettsia rickettsii is probably the one that's most well known that causes Rocky Mountain spotted fever. But there's also Rickettsia montanensis and Rickettsia parkeri, and those also cause, they're linked in with those spotted fever diseases. And then Francisella tularensis, which is tularemia. So those were the four genera that I was looking at, and we're trying to test 10 adult ticks of each of the four human biting species, or the more prevalent human biting species, at the county level, and see also what diseases are present throughout the state of Missouri. Just a small undertaking. Yeah. But then we're going to utilize citizen science, which is phenomenal, because it makes the citizens of Missouri active participants. So they're able to send me ticks from all over the state, which I wouldn't be able to go out and do by myself at any rate. And then it also at the same time is making them aware of ticks. And so trying to kind of increase, like, you know, so that some of them are actually even looking for ticks. And so I think with that comes just the increased awareness and maybe self-checks, and so hopefully a reduction of tick-borne diseases as well.
Yeah. Hopefully. I hope so. So have you really been able to get ticks submitted from every county in Missouri?
All but one. I have not received a tick from New Madrid, but every other county in the state of Missouri, I've been able to receive a tick.
That's just remarkable. And that was last year, I guess.
So it started in April last year. It's continuing through September of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So in today, I wrote down the number, 12,927 ticks have been submitted to me through the mail. It's amazing.
Yeah. Top that. Anybody who's
I know. It's just Missourians are like, they're just really behind this project. You know, I think they're really fired up about it. They understand. A lot of them have stories. So they've either had a tick-borne disease or they know somebody who's had a tick-borne disease, it seems like.
Yep. Well, so what have you learned?
Okay. I've received, so out of that 12,927, I got 8 different tick species. And 2 of them I've never seen before. So that was cool. I mean, other people have seen them, but I personally have not seen them. One was a bat tick, which is a soft tick. It's very different than the hard ticks that we usually come across.
Oh.
And so the soft tick is, you can't see the mouth parts like you can with a hard tick. And so they tend to stay very close to the host. So like either in the nest or somewhere where they're, this one in particular was a bat tick, or I've actually received 4 of these. And so when the house, if somebody goes to get rid of bats from their home, so they get rid of the bats and all of a sudden these ticks are like, what am I going to do now? And they start looking elsewhere for a warm meal. But these soft ticks, they tend to hang out in the nest or roost or whatever, so that way they can take a lot of small meals. So we don't usually interact with them too often. But the 4 species we were expecting, I've definitely got lots of. The number one species in prevalence has been the Lone Star tick. So that's the one where the female has the white dot on her back. The male doesn't. So the males, they're sexually dimorphic. And the male's smaller. But by far, I've received most of those. The second most prevalent tick species has been and I have received Lone Star tick in all but 10 counties.
Wow.
Of the state.
Wow.
And saying that, like, actually, it might be like 8 counties I haven't received it. But when I say 10, that means, so CDC says you can call a tick established within a county if you receive 6 adults or 2 different life stages within a year of sampling.
Mm-hmm.
So those 10 counties just means I haven't received 6 or 2 different life stages.
Mm-hmm.
So that tick is throughout the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dermacentor variabilis, so that's the American dog tick. So I received that in all but 31 counties to create it as established. So again, that tick is probably also throughout the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
And then the black-legged tick, so that's the one most people are familiar with Lyme disease. That's the known vector. Sometimes people call it the deer tick. That tick I received much less of. Let me see, how many counties? I have that in 61 counties now in the state, and not established, but just from 61 different counties. And then the Gulf Coast tick, I've received that from 15 different counties. So that tick has actually been marching north, but it's mainly every place I've collected it, or I should say citizens have submitted it, has been south of the Missouri River. So it's still very much in the southern part of the state.
Okay, gosh.
There's a lot. And now I'm testing for all the pathogens, or I'm not teaching right now or anything. So I've been able to do a lot of the PCR work. And so far I have 809 adults tested, and about 6% of those have had some human pathogen.
Wow. So is that for both years? Out of the entire collection?
That is what I have tested to date. So, people are still mailing me ticks now. The ones they're mailing me now, I haven't tested. So these would be from last year. With the testing, what I'm trying to do is, so on the submission form, it has like location, so the county, but then also latitude and longitude. Mm-hmm. And if they provide those, I'm trying to get a nice representation of the entire county. So not just all clumped in one site. Because, you know, people tend to submit more than one tick if they're going to submit a tick. And so I'm trying not to test all 20 from that one location, you know, like I'm trying to get a nice spread.
I see. Okay. So if we've sent you 10 ticks, we could probably stop now.
If it's from that same location in the same species.
Okay. Well, so you said that Lone Star ticks are established everywhere in the state. You know, we can basically say that. Tell us about this tick and if there are things we should look out for. How should we treat this one?
Okay. This one's kind of a nasty one, I think. This is the one that's known to spread heartland virus. It's suspected to spread bourbon virus. And those are the you know, I'm not looking at the viruses, but if you were to get a tick-borne disease, those are the most deadly, I would say. It's also the one that spreads ehrlichiosis. Mm-hmm. Now, ehrlichiosis can be a mild disease, but it can also be life-threatening as well. So for the very young, the very old, the immunosuppressed, so if you're taking medication for arthritis or something like that might suppress your immune system, or immunocompromised, then this can be a very much a life-threatening disease.
Uh-huh. Can you get resistant to ehrlichiosis if you've had it?
No, I don't think so. So whether or not you can get, so they know like with Lyme disease, you can get it over and over and over again. Ehrlichiosis, what makes it tricky is that there's different species that cause it and then different subvariants of those species. So it's possible you could build resistance if you happen to get the exact same strain.
I see.
But it's not a given. Mm-hmm. There's still, other than Lyme disease, there's not a whole lot known about tick-borne diseases. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have been doing lots of research, but it's still, you know, science is slow. And not a lot of people have been getting money to do tick-borne work. It's starting to change now because of Lyme disease and because people are saying, hey, we want to go out and enjoy our summer. Can you do something? So money's starting to filter in to do more research, but a lot of it's been focused towards Lyme because that is the most prevalent disease in the U.S., tick-borne disease. So ehrlichiosis, however, Missouri is the state for ehrlichiosis. Oh. Like we are the state.
Wow.
So, and then for Rocky Mountain spotted fever, we are one of five states that account for over 60% of cases of Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
Ooh.
So, I mean, Missouri is, and we're also the state where both heartland virus and Starry were first discovered and described.
Oh, I guess we could be proud of that.
Yeah. Yay. Good for me.
Okay. There's not too many things, you know, that we know about that we were first of. Well, so let's talk about Lyme disease a little bit because that's one that I think an awful lot of people have heard about. How would we know if we had Lyme disease? How do we get that?
Okay, so Lyme disease is spread by the black-legged tick or Ixodes scapularis. So the deer tick. That one, so all tick-borne diseases, the initial symptoms tend to be fever, achy joints, lethargic, just sort of your general malaise. So flu-like symptoms,
mm-hmm.
not super descriptive, right? Lyme disease, maybe you get that erythema migrans. So you get that migrating redness, right? The bullseye rash, possibly. That doesn't happen in many cases. And if it's on your back and you live alone, are you going to see it? So it's, I think it's like 40% of the cases you'll get that rash. Mm-hmm. But those general flu-like symptoms, pandemic aside, if it happens in the summer, you should be thinking tick-borne disease.
Mm-hmm.
And if you suspect tick-borne disease and you've got the fever and the achy joints and headache, maybe a rash, including like a, you know, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, so this general spotted rash, any kind of rash, I would seek medical attention. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is that for the bacteria, if you get treated quickly, you can get rid of these without problem. But if you're, you know, it's when the treatment's delayed or doesn't happen, then that can cause problems down the road.
Okay. So maybe an antibiotic.
Yeah. Doxycycline all day long. If it's bacterial, doxycycline for all tick-borne. Yep.
Okay. That's great to know. Now deer tick, you mentioned that the Lone Star tick has the little dot, the female has the little dot, and that's a fairly tiny tick.
It's much bigger than the deer tick.
It's bigger than the deer tick. Okay.
Much bigger.
So the deer tick is the teeny one?
So, okay. Each of these hard ticks, so the ones that we tend to find on our bodies, there's three life stages. So you have the larval life stage, which is six legs, three on each side.
Yeah.
They then take a blood meal. They'll filter, so they feed to repletion. They'll drop off, and then they'll molt into the nymph. Now, at this point, the nymph has eight legs.
Wow.
The nymph then requires a blood meal. And then it will drop off once it's fed to repletion and molt into an adult. Once an adult, now it has a gender, whether it's male or female. And these hard ticks that are common in Missouri, they're all sexually dimorphic, so they look different. But then they require one more blood meal in order to mate and lay eggs. Yeah, so when you say the small one, that could be a juvenile life form. So that could be the larval, or what people will call seed. I always call those the seed tick because they're about the size of a grass seed. I mean, they are super small.
Well, you are listening to an interview with Deb Hudman of A.T. Still University. She runs a tick experiment that's been going on for a couple of years, thanks to A.T. Still University and the Department of Conservation here in Missouri. This broadcast originally aired on April 20th, 2022. This is Farm and Fiddle. We air on KOPN 89.5 FM and KOPN.org on the World Wide Web. We air Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Central Time. Let's go back to that interview with Deb.
So again, with a Lone Star tick, and again, our most prevalent tick in the state, she lays her eggs all in one clump, and she puts this sticky substance around these eggs. And what that does is it prevents desiccation. It's also got some antibacterial agents in there, so they won't rot, basically. And then when they hatch, what's unique about the Lone Star is that they all stay clumped together. So you have, and she'll lay about 2,500 eggs at a time.
One adult?
One female.
Oh.
2,500 eggs. And so when you run into one of those larval nests, basically, you don't get one or two on you. You get hundreds to thousands on you.
Wow.
And so they start in this tight little clump, and then all of a sudden they'll start spreading out. Now, the good thing about the larval forms is they haven't had a blood meal. So the options of them having a disease, like the probability is rather low, because the only way that they could have a disease is if mom transmitted it to them, right? She was able to give it to the eggs. Now, there are some diseases that do that. Lyme disease is not one. So Rocky Mountain spotted fever, yes, that can happen, but that's in a different tick. So I forget where I was going with that, but I guess basically the small size, it could be those larvae, it could be a nymph. So like the deer tick or the black-legged tick, the nymph is about the size of a poppy seed.
Okay.
So they're really easy to miss.
Yeah, really teeny.
They're super small. Yeah. Yeah, and they can get someplace where you just don't see them. And what, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if what we're, because we're already seeing ticks this year, are we mostly seeing the little tiny juveniles? It seems to me like they would know. There's no simple answers with this one.
No, what you tend to see right now are the adults and the nymphs.
Oh.
Because the larvae, so again, those adults need a blood meal. They drop off. So for the Lone Star, they tend to lay those eggs in the fall, or late summer. So then they hatch and they have to overwinter. You tend to run into those sea ticks in the fall. So like August, September, that's when you're running into those nests. So the larvae hatch at that point, but then they have to overwinter. It's possible for them to get a blood meal and then turn into a nymph. So like we've seen some where you'll see some nymphs in the spring, but you'll also see them in the fall, depending on when they get that blood meal.
So the juveniles that are basically in a wad, I guess we could say, those have to go out and forage and find a blood meal. How do they find that blood meal?
So they don't. Like, again, they stay clumped together. So it's when you happen to walk by, right? So if you walk by, you pick them up. Or if a deer walks by, they'll pick them up. Or a raccoon or a possum or whatever. They just kind of latch on.
Okay.
Now, all ticks will do this. It's called questing. So in their front legs, they have this little organ that can sense carbon dioxide. So if you happen to see a tick on a blade of grass and you step close to it, you'll see their arms, their front legs start waving because they're sensing a meal coming.
Oh my goodness.
And if you back away, then it will slow down because they're not picking up on that carbon dioxide.
Oh my gosh.
So that's why they hang out a lot on trails, right? Because that's where the carbon dioxide's at. Game trails and human hiking trails and whatnot. But they only really travel as far as their host, right? So once they're on the host, now they're on for a ride. And then once they feed and drop off, it's just wherever they land.
The host, that's us. And the ride, that's us taking the ticks from the woods back, or the field, the pasture, wherever we've been walking. The city park, and we are taking them back home with us. So let's really pay attention. And you've been listening to a conversation with Deb Hudman, who is the Senior Research Associate with a project, a really innovative project at Still University. Deb is analyzing ticks from all over Missouri and trying to figure out exactly what diseases these ticks are bringing into our state. We'll get back to talking about her project, but I thought it was very appropriate to bring in the tune you hear in the background, and that is Devil's Dream, played by the incomparable Kelly Jones. I thought ticks must really be a devil's dream.
Okay. Well, of course, we're all interested in knowing how we can avoid them and how we can repel them. And do you have some tips for us?
Yeah, so I would definitely look into permethrin. So you can get permethrin at Walmart. You can order it off Amazon. You can even buy clothes that already have permethrin embedded in it. The cheapest route that I found are the permethrin, which is a spray bottle. And so what I do when I go out in the field and go hiking and such, I tend to have a pair of pants that I use for that, or a couple pairs of pants. And so what I do is I take it out to my garage and I spray from the knee down with this permethrin. And the reason why I take it out to the garage is because I have a cat in my house. And if the cat comes in contact with it, it will, while it's wet, it will kill it.
Oh my.
So if you have a cat that you like, then you don't have it get near the permethrin while it's wet. Once it's dry, not a problem. So I spray it on my pants from the knees down. I spray it on my socks and I spray it on my boots. And it's good for multiple washes. It stays in. And then after a certain amount of time, I would just repeat the process.
Mm-hmm. Is this the same as DEET?
No, it's different. Mm-hmm. It's different. But this permethrin, it's pretty darn effective on keeping them off or slowing them down quite a bit. Honestly, when I do it, when it's applied correctly, I rarely find ticks on me.
Huh. Wow, that's great to hear. But just make sure that while it's wet, if you have a cat, just
don't have it get near it.
Get away.
Yeah, and definitely you do not put this on your bare skin. Oh. So this is something you put on clothing. You do not put it at all on your skin. I mean, it's pretty nasty.
Okay, what is it actually? Or do you know?
I don't know. Okay. I don't even think that they probably tell you exactly, because it's going to be proprietary, right? They want to market it. Yeah, but it's effective.
Okay.
Well, as Farm and Fiddle listeners know, we don't use chemicals on my farm, Terrabella Farm. And I'm always a little concerned about recommending them for anybody else. So I looked on Consumer Reports and I found the following information. In Consumer Reports, everybody might know this, but Consumer Reports does tests in their labs and comparative tests, and they report to the public how those tests came out. So they're telling us that DEET has been available to the public as a repellent for ticks, mosquitoes, and other pests since 1957. In our tests, we've found it to be the most consistently effective. Our current testing uses only mosquitoes, but past years of testing have shown that repellents that work well against mosquitoes also tend to do well against ticks. DEET has proved to be so effective at repelling ticks that it's often used as the standard to compare the efficacy of newer repellents, says Lars Eisen, PhD, a research entomologist in the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Division of Vector-Borne Diseases. Joan Moratori, the test program leader at Consumer Reports for test repellent, says, "Our testing has found that DEET affords the most reliable protection. It can be applied to skin and clothes, although it shouldn't be applied under clothes, and it comes in a number of formulations that all appear to be effective. There are lotions, wipes, and aerosol sprays with 25 to 30% DEET that are effective. It keeps ticks away. Ticks don't like to touch skin that's been treated with DEET. It's inexpensive. It usually just costs $4 to $10. The bad news is it can damage certain synthetic fabrics and even plastic, like on a watch band. It also offers a short-term protection. You have to apply it every time you go outside. And there is a small margin of error. It needs to be applied to all exposed skin. Of course, what we all want to do is, and I know this isn't fashion, but tuck your pant legs into your socks when you go out for a walk, and that prevents the animals from getting close to your skin. Permethrin, unlike DEET, this is back to the Consumer Reports report, permethrin, unlike DEET, isn't applied directly to the skin. Instead, you can buy clothing that's treated with the pesticide, or you can treat your own clothing with the permethrin spray, or send them to a company that will treat it for you. Consumer Reports does not test permethrin, but the Army currently uses uniforms with it for protection against disease-carrying bugs of all kinds. The good news on permethrin is that it requires very few applications. It stays on as long as 16 washes and 16 days of wear, but it does still irritate ticks after that time. It's convenient. Rather than making sure you've sprayed repellent and covered all your exposed skin every time you go out, people start by putting on their permethrin-treated pants and shirts and shoes and hats and so forth. The bad news is it does require a little planning, because if you treat your own clothes, it is recommended you take them outside to spray them to avoid inhalation. Clothes should be completely dry before you wear them, which can take 2 to 4 hours. And as she mentions, cats are very susceptible to it. And if you have outdoor cats, as I do, it means that taking them outside isn't an option. They are, the permethrin-treated items are safe once completely dry, but make sure your cats stay away while you are spraying. You can use it on dogs, but again, make sure the cats and the dogs don't get together for 72 hours. There are some other tips on the Consumer Reports website on how to keep ticks out of your yard and so forth. And I'll just tell you that of the two, DEET is much easier to spell. It is DEET. Permethrin is PermeThrin. So you can look them up. I'm also experimenting with lots of different kinds of mixes of essential oils to keep the ticks away. I am a tick magnet, and I did have a tick disease last summer, the second time I've had a tick disease. So I'm very wary of them. So far, the best repellent I've found is a combination of eucalyptus and lavender. But it does make you pretty stinky. So I'll say use it at your own caution. And I welcome comments from anybody that is trying their own concoctions and maybe has found something that works better. Please get a hold of me.
And then if we do get a tick bite, and, you know, I seem to get a couple every year, is there a good way to pull them off of yourself? That you always hear about the head gets left in your body.
Yeah, so the best way is to take a pair of tweezers, like a nice pair of tweezers. And I like the ones that are actually flat, not pointy.
Okay.
And then I just, as close to the skin as possible and straight out. Please don't do the twisting thing.
Oh.
Don't, they'll use cigarettes to make them back out and stuff. And I'm just like, you're going to burn yourself. Like, just pull them straight out. And obviously, if you've been outside, like even in your yard or whatever, you definitely just give yourself a once over, because the quicker you find them, the easier they're going to detach.
Oh, okay.
What they do when they first bite into you is they're releasing antihistamines and anticoagulants, and then they're going to release this cement. They do all this before they start feeding, and they release a cementing agent. So if you can find them fairly quickly, then they're going to be very, you can probably even just grab them with your fingers at that point. But if they're stuck in fairly well, then a pair of good flat tweezers, like flat edge. I don't know if I'm describing that very well, but
yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
And then pull straight up.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Okay. That's great to know. I've always done the twisty thing. I've always thought that was the right way to go. Well, change in my ways. So, when you said that you had tested 809, I think you gave me a percentage of how many had diseases, but I didn't write it down.
6%.
6%. So really the chance of, I mean, we may get a tick, it may be dug in, but the chance of it having a disease isn't that high, right?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends. Like if you've got two ticks biting you a year, then no, chances are pretty low. Uh-huh. But up here, people will often remove hundreds of ticks, like every couple of weeks. So, you know, people who are living and working outside. So if they're, you know, farmers or, you know, MDC workers, you know, people who are out in the woods, hunters, like, these folks will, they're removing many, many ticks. So if you, you know, remove 30, 40 ticks, then there's a fairly good chance. So it just depends on how many ticks you're actually interacting with.
Mm-hmm. I get it. Yeah, that makes complete sense. Okay. Well, any other hints, any other stuff that we have not covered that you think would be good information for folks?
So if folks are interested in the study, they want to see a map of like what counties of what species have been collected. If they go to atsu.edu/ticks, the webpage should show up. The map right now is very good for knowing, like if you click on your county, it'll say how many ticks have been collected, what species and number. And then if you go to research updates, about, I say, the end of each month, I'm posting like what diseases have been found in what counties and what tick species. So, and then there's some descriptions about what those diseases are if they go into the research updates.
Perfect. Well, give us a hint. Mid-Missouri, we're in, Columbia's in Boone County, and then we're abutted by, Callaway, Cole. Can you tell from your map how our Mid-Missouri area is doing?
Yeah, let me, I can actually, all right, here we go. Boone County, so I've tested Town Lone Star. Two of those have been positive for Ehrlichiosis.
Whoa.
7 were positive for Rickettsia amblyommatis, but don't get too excited about that. That Rickettsia amblyommatis, if that does cause disease, it has to be so incredibly mild because it is in like 80% of the ticks. It's at the point where I'm like thinking I'm just going to remove it because I think it's just going to confuse people. It's been shown to show some mild disease, like when they test hamsters and whatnot, it can give them a disease, but like, again, it's so prevalent. I just can't imagine this is actually causing anything worth concern in the Lone Star tick. So Boone, what were some of the other counties?
Callaway.
Callaway, 10 ticks, nothing that I've tested for Lone Star.
Wow.
And Cole. Cole, I haven't tested yet. And Audrain, I haven't tested yet. So out of 55 ticks, 4 had a human pathogen.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel pretty good about being able to go out and enjoy the nice, beautiful spring weather that we're having.
Yes, that's about 7. That's 7%.
Okay. Yep. It seems to me like it's kind of a little bit seasonal. I'm getting them already, but it seems like June is the hot button month, at least in my farm.
Yeah.
And then
I would agree with that. Like there's a lot of nymphs at that point too, which is because they're smaller, you don't tend to notice them as much. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, June, definitely, you know, midsummer, when people are out more, you're going to find more. You know, okay. So it's definitely, you know, the seasonal thing is really, when are we outside most
playing? Yeah. Okay, makes sense. Well, thank you, ma'am. Is there anything else that you want to get in there?
No, I think that'll do it.
And maybe we can talk. You're not going to close up shop in September, but is that when you're going to really start the heavy lift on what's going on, or how
do you in September, that's when the mailing of the ticks will end.
Okay.
So I'm depending on, you know, last year there was a point where I was getting 1,000 ticks per week in the mail. So all I had time to do was open mail, identify the ticks, put them into the system, and that's all I could do. And so now I'm trying to get caught up with some of this PCR work, finding the pathogens. So depending on how much mail I start getting this year, it seems like people have lost a little interest. It's not as novel, or they don't realize it's still happening. I'm not quite sure. Mm-hmm. But the tick numbers haven't been nearly what they were last year at this time. Mm. But MDC is coming out, the Conservationist, that magazine.
Oh, yeah.
They're featuring this research in the May in the Nature Lab.
Okay.
And then, and also Department of Health and Senior Services contacted me. We submitted a grant because what they want to do is potentially give me more money so I can test more ticks.
Good.
So if that happens, it would be this fall, so I'd be able to continue on with the pathogen testing, hopefully.
Wonderful. Well, it's really great to get this information out there and get it done, I think. Thanks so much for your work. Wow. You know, I just have to ask you, how did you get interested in this? I hadn't intended to ask it, but I just have to know now.
Yeah, it's a fair question. So when I first went to school, I got a work study job working in a lab that was studying lizard malaria. And it was so interesting to me because basically it was these sand flies that would hatch out of ground squirrel nests, out of their dung at night. These sand flies were what were transmitting it to the lizards. Now, this is a different malaria than what we get, but it was just so intriguing. Like, it was six different moving components and trying to figure out the puzzle. And at that point, I was just completely hooked on wildlife diseases and transmission cycles. And then this just sort of, my graduate work focused on thin and release silvicultural prescriptions, so forest management, and were we creating basically disease reservoirs? So looking at how you go in, and oftentimes this was out in Northern California, but they wanted to promote growth of like Douglas fir trees. And so they would cut back these non-desirable trees like tan oak and such. And so it's called a thin release. So you thin out those trees so you can release the others to grow faster and straighter. And then, but then you get all this debris on the ground. And so that creates more nesting material for rodents, which tend to carry the initial forms of ticks. And then black bears were going into these thin and release units because when the moms came out in the spring, they want that initial meal, right? So they would strip the trees because there was lots of sap flowing and they're just riddled in ticks. And so they would drop off these ticks, then they would lay eggs, hatch, you have increased rodents. So I was just looking at that whole process. And it was, and then I ended up in Missouri and it's like Tick Central. So of course I'm going to continue tick research here. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I've just been doing it for a very long time. And I like it.
Oh, how lucky can a girl get? You just ended up in the right place.
I did. I really did.
Well, that podcast has been an interview with Deb Hudman of A.T. Still University. And as you have realized as you listen to it, she is running an innovative tick project at the A.T. Still University. Thanks for listening. We have plenty of other podcasts on our website, and you can tune into Farm and Fiddle on Wednesday nights, 6 p.m. Central, KOPN 89.5 FM in mid-Missouri, and KOPN.org on the World Wide Web. Thanks for listening. And we have time for a very quick chore of the week. I hope you got in on those little cube radios that KOPN was giving away. I guess it was last year during the pledge drives. I don't know if there's any of them left, but they're really wonderful to take out with you when you are gardening. And they're rechargeable, even. So the chore of the week this week is to go out and get in that garden and do some mulching. You might use straw, you might use wood chips, you might use cardboard. Whatever you use, this is a good time to get it down because the weeds are coming up and you want to protect the plants that you love and that you've taken such good care of. One reason to take that radio out there with you and listen to KOPN is that on Saturday we will be celebrating Vinylthon, which is, a holiday for radio geeks that was started by the college radio folks and picked up by collectors of vinyl LPs. It's a day that here at KOPN, our programmers are going to play all vinyl records, the long-playing LPs that you remember, maybe you remember. It's extra exciting for me because since we are moving, I have been one of the many people who are going through our music collections to decide what is essential, what we have to take with us, and what we can very sadly let go and allow it to move on maybe to another archive or a collector or something. Anyhow, chore of the week, get out there and mulch. Take your radio with you, especially on Saturday, but anytime. Why would you be without your radio? And we'll have another chore for you next week. Thanks for listening.